Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveeryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahi Namastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So yesterday then Maharaj Janamejaya, he was working out exactly how if anyone was guilty, right? There was a guiltiness anywhere. Also, we want to get for here these two. If there was any fault, right? Means he knew his father had died and this and that and nothing had happened, and so he's just going on. But then he wanted to check because Utanka had come and said that there's some problem here. So then, and he said that he had problem with Takshika, and Takshika was giving problem to his father. Right, so there was a fault there. So as a king, then he must check. So he checked nicely. And he found that, you know, for no reason, then he's giving money to Kasyapa to not revive Maharaj Pariksit. Right? That's his mentality. Right? It doesn't say that Takshika understood that, you know, it's not like this was the thing. Kasyapa is hurrying to the spot. Takshika sees him. Takshika asks, "Oh, where are you going, my dear father?" And then he says, "Oh, Pariksit Maharaj, by the curse, will be bitten by you. But you know, I have learned from Lord Brahma, you know, how to counter this. And so, being that he's a great personality king, you know, society is depending upon him. So even though he's cursed, then I'm going to revive him for the good of everybody." And Takshika went, "Great." You know, and then they went their different ways. Or, take it a step further, Takshika could have said, "But, you know, that he's been cursed to die, are you sure that according to his karma, this isn't the end of his life anyway? So then you'd be, you know, it would be a waste of your time, and then if you couldn't revive him, then that would look bad for you." And then Kasyapa said, "Okay, 1 minute," and then sits down in meditation. And then goes, "Yes, you're right. Actually, that is the end of his life, so there would be no use in me doing this." And then Takshika said, "But it's so nice that you're doing this. You know, you would have gotten a nice dakshin, so, hey, I'll give you double." You know, like that. And then everybody would have been happy, right? Does that make sense? You know, and Takshika came before, you know, Maharaj, you know, Pariksit, and says, "I'm really sorry, but, you know, according to curse, then this is what we have to do, so you please excuse me," and then he bites him. Right? So, does that make some sense? Then it's one of those things, what have to do? Fate is like that. But it wasn't. Takshika didn't know that Kasyapa knew that was the end of his life. He's just thinking he's turning him back and doing it by giving him double money. Does that make sense? So that means Takshika's guilty. Yeah? Does that make sense? Right. So section 51. Sauti said, "King Janamejaya, having said so," means in other words he says, "I must now avenge myself on my father's enemy to please myself, the Rishi Utanka, and you all," right? Because the ministers would not have been pleased, but nothing had happened, right? And Utanka is not happy with Takshika, and now Janamejaya is determined that he is not very pleased. So then continue. Sauti said, King Janamejaya, having said so, his ministers expressed their approbation, and the monarch then expressed his determination to perform a snake sacrifice. And that lord of the earth, the tiger of the Bharata race, the son of Parikit, then called his priest and Ritviks, and accomplished in speech. Here Ritviks means assistance, right? It's a managerial arrangement for the success of the yajna, that the main priest had assistance, right? It's not a philosophy. Right? Does that make sense? And accomplished in speech, he spake unto them these words relating to the accomplishment of his great task. I must avenge myself on the wretch Takshaka, who killed my father. Tell me what I must do. Do you know any act by which I may cast into the blazing fire the snake Takshaka with his relatives? I desire to burn that wretch even as he burnt of yore by the fire of his poison, my father. Right? So it's befitting. Otherwise, I want to say, why a snake sacrifice? Right? Because he burnt his father by his poison, so then naturally he will be burnt back. Does that make sense? Also, we see here is that there are things that, how do you say, a regular sin will affect only oneself, but if that sin offends devotees, right, and like that, or Brahmins, or in this case like the emperor, then not only will it affect oneself, it'll affect one's family and relatives and everything else. Does that make sense? Just say, you know, the man hits somebody like that, an ordinary person. He gets the reaction himself. His family does not share in this, right? He's okay. His consciousness may be somewhat polluted, so that much, but otherwise directly they won't. But let's say he hits a qualified Brahmin or he hits a devotee, then that will not only be affect him, because the how bad it is, it's more than what could be ever done to him. Does that make sense? So therefore it will extend beyond him to what he considers himself, right? And so that will be his family and relatives and place. And does that make sense? You know, because the materialist, when he thinks I, it's I, my body, I, my family, my possessions, I, my dynasty, I, my place of residence, my community, does that make sense? So it extends to this greater I, because just punishing him wouldn't actually balance the offense. Does that make sense? Right? Because the offense should be balanced. Right? Whatever's done wrong, then that should be balanced, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it affects his family also. Does that make sense? Like that. So many things in the Shastras determine that it goes beyond. Right? So that's why here we see is then his Takshaka and his relatives. Right? It's going beyond. It's not that they just he came and bit somebody. He bit the emperor, and that means the whole world has problem. Right? So because the world is his praja or his citizens. Right? So they're like family. So therefore Takshaka and his family. Does that make sense? So none of these things are arbitrary. If you see that the curse that is there or the punishments there fits, you know, like Nala Kuvera and Manigriva with Narad Muni, right? They're naked and, you know, they're in a very powerful position. They're naked and they don't mind being naked. Does that make sense? So therefore then they're given the position of trees, right? Trees don't wear clothes, right? They're naked. Does that make sense? So they were cursed like that. Does that make sense? So it's not something just any old thing. It's exactly matching what's wrong with the mentality, because what's wrong with the mentality, that's what the punishment must correct. Does that make sense? The idea is the punishment corrects the mentality. Punishment's not revenge. Does that make sense? Okay? Yes. How much you consider or how much they consider, yeah. It would probably be more what you consider unless they're a dependent. If you're a dependent or you're dependent on them. So let's say you're not associated with them, but they're still giving you money. Then there's a dependency, there's a connection, so it would affect. Because along with money then comes, you know, nothing's free in this world. Like that. So if they are your dependent or you're dependent upon them, then there'll be some effect. You know, depending on how much is there, then more or less. Yeah. So that also, and also that goes the same with children. Just because they're children doesn't mean there's no effect. The parents get it. You know? Like the devotee comes along and the three-year-old boy then offends the devotee and makes all kinds of stupid comments. And then the mother and her friends all go, you know, giggle and go, oh, how cute. Like that. You know, he's a little kid. And then, you know, and the thing is they're little and how, you know, what can go wrong? They're being stupid, but, you know, it's cute, you know, because energy is being expressed and activity's there and ego is manifest, so it's very pleasing, right? But what they didn't understand is the offense to that devotee just went to the parents. It's not that you can say, yes, the child's innocent, they get no reaction. Yes, it's true. It goes to the parents. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you know, all these things are there. Why do you think, you know, the parents were all nice and young and spunky and enthusiastic, and then after, you know, raising their kids for X amount of years, they become kind of like worn down and pessimistic and, you know, don't know who they are and, you know, everything like that. You know, does that make sense? Like that. Because they're taking on reactions of the kids. Yeah. So that's the whole point. Nothing's free. So one's attachment you have to pay for. So that's why parents are always very careful that. That's why it says don't become, you know, a mother, a father, a king, you know, a priest, like this, a presiding demigod, unless he can save your dependents from death. Saving from death means take them back to Godhead, or at least get them liberated. Does that make sense? So this idea is that, well, you just have the kids and we like the emotional interaction and, you know, that's all it is and no one's talking about anything else anyway, right? So, therefore, how do you say? It's all right. Does that make sense? So the whole point is whatever it is, you have to pay. That's the thing. So, somebody's respected in an area because they're taking risk in it, right? Vaishyas are respected in the economic field because they take risk with money, right? They're willing to risk, take that risk. Kshatriyas are willing to take political risk, therefore they have the political respect, right? Brahmins in teaching, right? Does that make sense? Or Shudra in their art, right? They take the risk, yes. I built this building, it will be good, it will have our standard, our quality, or, you know, we will sing or dance, and it will have, you know, the standard of our parampara. Does that make sense? So, that's what gives them the respect. So, grihastas respected over the brahmachari because they're taking that risk. They're taking that social risk, but that risk is there, right? Even if a whole community doesn't think there is, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? When it says everybody's entitled to their opinion means you can have it, but it doesn't mean it's true, right? The saying is not everybody's opinion is truth, right? That's not there. But what is said is everyone's entitled to it, you know, just like everybody's entitled to, deal with your house however you want, you know. But it's not that there won't be people who say, oh, it's a nice house, so you get that, or it's a mess, so therefore it's that, or... You know, saying it's that you can do it, but it doesn't mean that it's correct. Does that make sense? Right. There was a group of foolish persons who thought everybody's opinion means the consolidation of everybody's opinion, that together is truth. Right. These were called sophists. They lived around the time of Socrates. Right. So their philosophy is whatever anybody says is truth, that's truth. They're atheists, right? Does that make sense? So political correctness started then. There's nothing new, right? Anything that's going on today is everybody thinks it's new and it's cutting edge and it's latest and, oh, it's different. But no, if it was going on before when the Greeks, right, even before the Romans, right? Everything was happening, right? Whatever's going on now is all happening then. They didn't have any... Because it's standard set stuff. It's just like saying, oh yes, the dogs bark now and the birds chirp and, you know, fish swim and frogs croak and like that. But, you know, 1,000 years ago it was different, you know. So we have to, you know, adjust everything in our society for them. Right? Now one may say, no, but we're free thinking sentient persons, so is the dog. The dog on his own decides to bark. Right? In his mind, he sees the importance of barking now. And you say, well, they're animals. They're just, being led by their senses and controlled by the modes. But according to the Acharyas and the scriptures, anybody who's not God conscious is also under the same thing, maybe more sophisticated. You bark standing on two legs instead of on four. Like that. Does that make sense? But it's the same. Yeah? Yes.
Sitting on four legs.
Huh?
Sitting on the bench, I would say.
Sitting on the bench. But the bench has four legs, so... But they have two, so they're on six legs, so then that's like a bug. You know what I'm saying? So like that, then... These things work. So political correctness being thought of as a philosophy or as a cultural standard, that's old, right? Because there's set things that people who don't follow the Vedas will do, how they'll think, what they'll do. It's set. You just know it. Does that make sense? You know, it may look a little different here and there, but it's the same thing. Yeah? Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. So does that all make sense? That means justice means appropriate and according to the time, place, and circumstance and according to scriptures. Right? Does that make sense? The chief priest answered, "There is, O king, a great sacrifice for thee devised by the gods themselves. It is known as the snake sacrifice and is read of in the Puranas. O king, thou alone canst accomplish it, and no one else. Men versed in the Puranas have told us there is such a sacrifice." Sauti continued, "Thus addressed the king, O excellent one, thought Takshaka to be already burnt and thrown into the blazing mouth of Agni, the eater of the sacrificial butter." See, he has his determination of what he's doing, and he understands that through this accomplishment, it will be there. So that faith is there, that focus is there. It's not that he's an illusion. He knows that by performing this, you accomplish this. Right? Of course, it's up to the Lord. But he knows that this is there, so there's full focus, so therefore it gets done. He's not thinking, yeah, we should do this, but maybe it will, maybe it won't, should I do, should I not do, so nothing will really happen. That's why I said only you can do it, because your focus is complete. Right? Does that make sense? The king then said unto those brahmanas versed in mantras, I shall make preparations for that sacrifice. Tell me the things that are necessary. And the king's Ritviks, O excellent Brahmana, versed in the Vedas and acquainted with the rites of that sacrifice, measured, according to the scriptures, the land for the sacrificial platform. And the platform was decked with valuable articles, with Brahmanas. And with Brahmanas. Okay, platform was decked with valuable articles and with Brahmanas. So it means they're also an ornament. The Brahmanas are also considered the, you know, the jewel of the human society. So here we see the Ritviks, because the king is performing the sacrifice. So the Ritviks means they're doing it on behalf of the king. But that's because the king wants to do it. Does that make sense? Is that understood? Yes.
So the Ritviks are assistants of the king or of the priest?
Means you can say is you have the priests and their Ritviks, but you can also call them all Ritviks, because they're, means in other words, the king wants to do. He's the Yajaman. The priests are doing on his behalf, so they're Ritviks. But until he gives the dakshin, then the result of the sacrifice is with them. So technically, they're doing the sacrifice. But it's by the king giving the, or the yajaman giving the dakshin, that it's transferred. Does that make sense? So until the dakshin is given, the results of that sacrifice are with the Brahmins. It's not the king's. Even though he's set up and done everything. It's only when he gives a dakshin, an appropriate dakshin, then it's transferred. So then in that way you could say is the Brahmins are the ones doing it and their assistants are the Ritviks. So you can say it either way. So it's been used both here. It said the priests and their Ritviks, and then here it just said in general the Ritviks, because they're all doing it on behalf of the king. Does that make sense? So the Brahmins, the priests are thinking we're doing this on behalf of the king. Right? But it's understood technically they're doing the thing for themselves, and then when the king gives it, then it's transferred. Okay? Does that make sense? But the point is that the king verbally calls them, there's a relationship, and he tells them what to do. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, if there's not one way, you can do one thing, but does that make sense? Means I have an instruction, I can hear it, and I can follow it. So it creates a six-year relationship, but it's one way. Right? If it's a saintly person, they are non-different from the instructions, but it still doesn't have the same rasas. You know what I'm saying? You can only have shanta. Right? But for a diksha relationship means then there must be, it goes into servitorship. So that means it's both ways. They have accepted, they have surrendered. They want it done, then someone can do it on their behalf. Right? Just like the guru can have a priest there doing the fire sacrifice. Right? But it's on his behalf. But he's ordered it. But just to say, I'm doing this on their behalf, that means it's from your side, there's appreciation. But it doesn't mean that the other person is actually involved. Does that make sense? You see technically the difference here? No. You want a sacrifice done, right? So you approach me and you say, please do the sacrifice. So there's a relationship between us, agreed upon. I do the sacrifice on your behalf. Haven't really seen you, I've heard about you, I appreciate you. I decide I'm doing this sacrifice on your behalf for your benefit, but you're actually the responsible person for it. I can't make that decision. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, The guru takes on a disciple, they're responsible for them and take their reactions, right, for their spiritual life and agree to take them back to Godhead. Only the guru himself can make that decision. Does that make sense? I can't make it on your behalf and say that that's what you want if I haven't talked with you or met with you or like that. You know what I'm saying? Sounds very nice, but I can't do that. Because your relationship with the persons that are being initiated is that of servitorship. But that means you have to agree to be the master. You know what I'm saying? So siksha-wise, just by appreciating your, how do you say, position and your instructions, that I can have a relationship. Because I'm appreciating them. Right? But I can't say that you've accepted me. You know? Does that make sense? Other than a generic sense that these instructions are there for people to take advantage of. Yeah? Does that make sense now? And it was full of precious things and paddy, right? It means unhusked rice and stuff like that. You know, the dhan is considered auspicious. And the ritvik sat upon it at ease. So if it says the ritvik, then that will mean the hota, the main one. Or if it's bigger than the brahma, right? Or if it's bigger than that, it means the acharya. Right? You can have one where you just have the hota. It means the hotri. So he does it. Then bigger than that means there's hotri and an udgata, someone who chants the mantras. Bigger than that means then you add to that an advaryu, who actually sets everything up and builds the fire and all that. Right? Then still the hota is the head. Right? Then if it's bigger than that, then you have a brahma priest, who sees that the other three are doing their jobs right. Right? But if it's bigger than that, then you have the acharya. Right, he oversees the whole thing and the mood and everything is right, but the Brahma priest is the actual manages it, right? The acharya simply gives direction. Yes.
The Brahma priest is basically taking rule of power, kshatriya, and then the Brahma is just
kind of, but it, yeah, like that. But it's still within a hierarchy. You know, it would be like. Yeah, it means he's giving the direction. It's more advising. But it would be kind of like the GBC and the temple president. Yeah, kind of like that. Yes?
What is the appropriate donation for, like, the Ajaman should give to
the priest? It depends upon what's being done, how much effort is there in the actual sacrifice, how much knowledge and background that it took to actually, for the priest to be able to do that sacrifice, what is his general position and standing, you know, in society. So you have to take all that into consideration. You know what I'm saying? So the higher his standard, the greater knowledge he is, the more realization they are, the more advanced they are, then the bigger the dakshin. Right? Then you add on top of that how much work was actually put into it. You know, does that make sense? You know, so let's say like you have a research book. It was 10 years of research. It's a small book, but it costs, you know, it's more expensive, like a bigger book. Because the big book took the person, you know, let's say you have those novels, right? Somebody wrote it in 6 months, right? It's, you know, it's got 1,000 pages, but it doesn't cost much. And this one's only got 100 pages, but it costs the same. Because that one took so much longer. Does that make sense? So what it takes for them to know, so all that put together, that's why only an intelligent person can actually do sacrifice. Uneducated, or let's say, yeah, untrained in this area, or miserly persons cannot do sacrifice. These kinds of sacrifice. It means you can perform your prescribed duties. That's your sacrifice, but you can't do these things because they don't have actually the training and intelligence to discern what is appropriate and what's not. Right? Just like you go to one sacrifice, they want very, very big, big program. They want to impress everybody, right? So actually, it's just PR. It's not actually that they're worried about the sacrifice. Because, you know, we're preachers, but we don't care. Okay, so then if you want to impress people, then it means you do the ritual and everything very, very nicely. You know, and because you do the ritual very nicely, then we have people are impressed that here is people that do everything according to tradition and everything. Plus, the tradition is meant, it's a festival, it will look nice. So, they have 11 deities, they're all, you know, our general standard, you know, full-size ISKCON deities, you know, not life-size, but the, you know, full-size deities. They want to make all big arrangements, and they want to do all the ritual. You know, the priests advise that, no, the deities are too big, and the facilities that you have won't, you can't do certain rituals. You can do it for the small deities, right? No, we have to do it big. We have to do it big. Okay, so then to put all the deities in rice means we need this many beds of this size, and we're going to need this many tons of rice. And they say, yes, let's do, make it big, this, that. When you go, then you find, for 11 deities, you have one sack of rice. And the beds are actually the things that they use for, you know, when they do catering, you know, at weddings and stuff. You have these little foldable tables and stuff like that, you know, with the folding legs, and you have the little wire thing that you put through the little eye hook, and it holds the legs up, you know, and you're going to put on that a, you know, 100 kilo deity, you know, stuff like this. And then when you ask what's happening, then it's afterwards, well, it'd be a waste. What are we going to do with all this rice? And so, of course, it's practical, and the Brahmins are just being, you know, fanatic here. Right? This kind of person is not supposed to do sacrifice. Right? That's why in the Kali Yuga, chanting the holy name gives the results of anything you want to do. Even bigger than the Rajasuya or, you know, the Agnishtomas and Ashwamedhas and like that. Chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasad, distributing prasad, can't get better than that. Right? And everybody can do it to their degree. Does that make sense? So the point being is that, I mean, on that is that there's a qualification to do it. So that means on all sides. So such a person who can understand what dakshin is to be given means then if they'll give appropriate dakshin to the priests, means they understand and appreciate actually what's going on. That means they'll be able to make the arrangements for everything to be done at the sacrifice. Right? Because even though it may be done just for preaching, that doesn't mean it's a joke. You know? It doesn't mean it's a joke. Right? It's like, let us say, for preaching you want to dress up. Right? So, did we go out and get something, you know, an artificial 10 rupee dhoti that was made to look like a silk one? Right? And that's what the senior temple president, regional secretary is wearing? Or is it real silk? Right? Okay. Let us say they decide that for this program they need a nice car, a fancy car. So did he go down to the Bollywood, you know, number 10 go down and get out a facade car? I mean, it's not real. They just kind of made it out of a piece of tinfoil that looks like a Rolls Royce, but actually it's a, you know, 200 rupee imitation. Is that what he's going in? Or are they hiring a real Mercedes, a real this, a real that? Yeah? So if that's what we're going to do for ourselves, then why God doesn't get the real stuff? You know? So that's why these things have to be trained. Right? Brahmin Kshatriyas Vaishyas, they do sacrifice. They do yajnas. They go to the Gurukul. They all do them. They know what goes into it. Right? They know what it's like to be the main priest at an opening to the temple, that everything is only revolving around the deity installation, and the only place, and they put the whole Brahminical crew up underneath a set of stairs that are unfinished and is used as cement go down. They know what that means. So then when they grow up, and all those, persons that don't know what they're doing have now retired, and now they are the ones managing the society, then they know what it means if they want to do something, and they take care of their priests. They put them in the guest house, not under the stairs. They put the brahmacharis under the stairs and put them there. Does that make sense? Because they've grown up, they've gone to it, they know what it means. So that's why the Brahminical culture, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they learn exactly the same training. They learn all the same deity worships, yajnas, mantras, everything. The difference is the Brahmins will do it as an occupation, and the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas will also be yajamans. They won't do it for someone else, but they can do their own. Like Arjuna, he can do his own yajnas, right? He sits down, does his own, but he doesn't do it on someone else's behalf. Right? Does that make sense? The Brahmins do that. But these others, they know. So then society goes on nicely. Does that make sense?
Our Jewish people have donations for them. Sometimes they, like, for example, we go to the temple, and then, there's not shadam arranged or something, and then we're asking if they can arrange something, and they say, yeah, just give us a little donation. And then you don't know how much to give because you don't know how much they use or what they use. And then you don't want to give too little. At the same time, you don't have so much that you can just give a way over amount. So how do you...
In that case, because they're saying here donation translates into we need an advance to buy stuff, then you ask, well, how much would be appropriate? And they may say, if they're saying give whatever you like, then you say, well, give an idea. We don't know how much things cost here, what you run here. You give some way, and then they'll say, okay, give, 200-300 rupees. So that means they'd like 300, but you'll accept 200. So if you only have 200, you give 200. If you have 300, you give 3. Right? Like that. So that's the... Because there it's more just practical. Yes.
If a priest, he is participating in the program, and he sees that the program is not going the way it was prearranged or should go, but he wants to still finish it as a service to the deity or to the Lord, so now what should he do? Should he try his best, do what he can, and then whatever he could do? Or then he can say, well, you didn't arrange it the way we discussed, so then get somebody else to do it.
It depends upon your position, because the point is that if it can be accomplished, because the main thing is the devotion. The ritual is not actually what's important to the deity. The ritual is a medium through which one can relate to the deity. So that means the priests will get the benefit for that, but the yajaman in this case wouldn't. Right? Means they've, of course, if the deity's been installed, this, that, but that particular personal thing they won't get. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a difference between a general arrangement and a personal arrangement. Does that make sense? Like that. So the personal, they'll lose on. Like that. But the priest will get. But if it's a matter of it won't even be accomplished, then you can say then it's not there. There's also a third alternative that just has come to mind is, let us say like this, is that you say you need, 1 ton of rice, and they give you one sack, one tenth. So then, because it was discussed that you wanted to do it with a small deity, so you need X amount of rice, and they say no, do it for the big deities, but they don't want to give the rice, then you can just do it for the small deities and just inform them that this is not the facilities that won't work for the big deities, so therefore we're doing it for the small deities. And if they say okay, then that's fine. And if they say no, you have to do this, that, then you say, no, this is our job. It's not your job. So therefore, you know, we can't do it with this. So therefore, then in that case, this is all we can do. And then, if need be, get someone else.
If due to the misarrangements or whatever, some offenses are committed to the deities, so
that you avoid. That you avoid. But it's just a matter of how strong is that. Then you have to inform them this is what's going on. And then if you feel it's not going to work, then you have every right to not take part. Because the point is technically speaking, when this goes on, the priests are the guru of the Yajama. Right? Unless it's such a senior person, they're acting as the acharya, so then you're working under them. But if it's not, then you are there, because he says here is, you know, the gurus, the acharya, like that. So during the time of the yajna, you are their guru. So then, in that case, then they're supposed to listen. If they don't listen, then there's no obligation. A disciple who doesn't listen, the guru is under no obligation to actually reciprocate. Out of his kindness, he might, as long as it's only inconvenience to him. Okay, they live under the stairs, but everything goes nice for the deities. That's fine. That you don't leave for. But if what they're going to do is going to be a problem for the deities, you know, it's like they can't make any managerial arrangements. They have to bring all their big wealthy donors, and instead of just doing what anybody else in any sampradaya does, is make, you know, wonderful arrangements and manage it for their big donors and special people to be able to sit and get the best possible spot to observe the Abhishek, then being untrained, being sentimental, and being, how you say, good collectors, you know, as a motive, then they decide that this life member, you know, who isn't necessarily following any, you know, particular standards of cleanliness or anything else, is going to bathe the deities like the priests. Right? Stuff like that it's not important. Why bother? You want to get benefit for this. Then you want to do that, then don't have a deity installation. You know? Then don't go through all this ritual, just do a home deity that, you know, everybody's going to bathe. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You know, it doesn't work like that. You have to, you know, if it's a Paka deity installation, it runs according to Pancharatra. You want to just do whatever you want with the deity and just, you know, send them, then that's another thing. Does that make sense? And then when you see because of this, and that then now they're the Charinamrita that's come off the deity, now these life members are going, taking pots, filling it up with the Charinamrita, then going back and bathing the deity again with it, then at that time, then you can start saying that, you know, this Yajaman is unfit and everything has to stop. Right? You know, like this. Or if you can't, then just in the future you don't work with such Yajamans, because they've already proven themselves that they have no idea what's of any standard of anything. They're simply, their lack of sensitivity, their lack of arrangement, their lack of managerial ability, then they want to finesse by simply saying it's all preaching and we don't care for the rules. But if you look into their personal life, they care for every last little fine detail of the rule. You know what I'm saying? But when it comes to God or anyone else, somehow or another, they don't care. Like that. What to do?
Yes. Are the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas able to do the bigger sacrifices? Like they get,
do they do them themselves, the bigger ones? Generally not, because you have to be initiated into those. So they wouldn't do it. They can do the daily yajna, because that's what they're doing as brahmacharis. But brahmacharis generally aren't doing these big ones. These ones, then that's a Kshatriya. Kshatriya means then it's their Tvija, actually. Dvija means is Upanayana. Tvija means then they have another initiation on top of that. But now they can do all these big, big special Karmakanda yajnas. So that's why you won't see the kings in that doing them. And generally when it's something so big, one doesn't do it oneself. Just like in the samskaras, technically they're all done by the husband or father. But generally they don't do it. Just like the wedding, all the yajna and everything is technically supposed to be done by the husband himself. Right? But they don't. Even when Vishnu gets married, or Shiva gets married, they get a priest to do it for them. Right? So it's just, that's the tradition, because he'll be so caught up in things, and, you know, it means you're having a sacrifice, that means all your relatives, friends, guests, you have to take care of them. That's more important. Right? And then the priests are there, they can take care of the ritual. But guests, you can't hire someone to take care of your guests so much. Right? Certain things you can, yes. But the personal touch, no. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Is
dvija the same as Pancharatrik second initiation? No, dvija means upanayanam.
Dvija.
In one sense, you could say that, yeah, because we get both of those. You could say so. Then it's like that. But the normal thing is it gets too complex that only those who they do that, then they do it. If they, you know, if they're comfortable with it, yes, they could, if it's their own sacrifice. But generally, you don't, you know. You know, it's just like the priest who gets everyone else married at his marriage, someone else does the ritual. You know what I'm saying? It's just normal. Normal. But yeah, technically, Prabhupada mentions that we're dvija. Because, yeah, Upanayan, the Brahma Gayatri is dvija. And then the other Pancharatrik mantras make it dvija.
Dvija means born twice.
Born twice, yeah. Like dvija birds, you know.
Dvija?
Yeah. You know, like birds are born twice, they're dvija, you know. Because they're born from the mother as an egg, then they hatch from the egg. So they're dvija. That's why sometimes you notice, we were discussing before, the commonality between when you get a bunch of birds together and they make a lot of noise, and then you get a bunch of brahmacharis together and they make a lot of noise. Very similar, you know, like that, Nirmana. Because there's things very much in common there, you know, between the birds and the brahmacharis, yes.
And one thing is mentioned also in Narada Purana that if the yajaman doesn't pay donation, then he will get hurt. Doesn't give donation after sacrifice, and he will get hurt by sacrifice. If Brahman doesn't chant the mantra, then he gets hurt from a sacrifice. And if there's no proper arrangement made, then the whole family, along with the yajaman, will get hurt from the sacrifice.
Yeah. So
and this also mentions that there's no bigger enemy, bigger danger than no proper path of sacrifice.
Yeah. Not properly performed sacrifice, you know, because it's just these things. It's like everything else in our life, you can't just say, well, we chant Hare Krishna, doesn't matter. It's like that yajaman couldn't just say, oh, it doesn't matter how I deal with my wife, what I say, this and that, because we're devotees, we chant Hare Krishna, right? We chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't matter how much I eat, what I eat, when I eat it, we chant Hare Krishna. Or it doesn't matter actually what clothes I wear or what I speak when I go to visit the big life member and big political leader, because we're devotees, we chant Hare Krishna. Yes. Oh. You know? So like that, it one can say these things, but in real life no one follows like that. So why is it when it comes to spiritual, where we're uneducated in, we would think it would apply there? You know? Just because I'm a devotee, it doesn't matter how I drive down the road, which side of the road I drive on, I can drive on the sidewalk. We don't care for the rules. So if we have to care for the rules of the state, we have to care for social rules, we have to care for family rules, why we think that we're going to get away with avoiding God's rules? Right? Or I'll only follow my family rules but not the state rules, right? What happens to those people, right? They end up in jail, right? You know? The police come to take the boy away, or the man away, you know? And the mother was, but he was so nice with his mother. He's such a nice boy. You know? Like that. So, in a family is very nice, right? In fact, in some you know, criminal circles, they call everyone in the circle the family. And they deal like that, and they take care like that. In fact, their family is more taken care of than the most normal general people's family. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like that. But the state laws, they don't care. So why would someone is worried about state laws and doesn't care for God's laws get away with it? You know? Because sentiment is not just enough. It has to work. Right? You know, just because you meant well, it was only a quote-unquote joke, but it doesn't mean that the ladies have to accept it. Does that make sense? Right? They get angry anyway. It means that it was well meant, but it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? If it doesn't make sense, it will. Okay, is this get through? So this is the thing, we have to avoid this mentality. If it's a matter of we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, then don't get involved in the rules. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like you take the brahmachari. Okay, well here we'll take the Naistika brahmachari. He doesn't care for women. He's not, you know, doesn't need women, so he doesn't get involved in them. Does that make sense? And the person who's involved, the grihastha needs. So he's involved. So he takes responsibility. So, by the same logic, if we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, means therefore you don't get involved in them. Does that make sense? Prabhupada would have a big program and make a small, one singular little yajna. Okay, you want to do it a little bit more fancy, you make one a little bit bigger or something. Nowadays, you do 108 yajnas, right? Very big. Impressive. But if you check, not one of those 108 are even done properly. Maybe one is done okay. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I saw once a 108 yajna performance during Kumbh Mela. I think it was in... I saw it in... what was it? 87. Right? So then they had this huge, like, you know, bamboo and grass three-tiered hut that 108 kundas could fit into comfortably. Huge. And they spent years planning it. Right? Because you had 108 priests who all knew what to do. And you had all the ingredients and how to make the arrangements. Because Allahabad means you're out in the middle of nowhere. You're out in the sand. Right? You're in a riverbed. And they got all that together. Years of planning. Right? Does that make sense? That's actually impressive. That has some meaning. Okay. You do one nicely, so therefore you do 108 as nice as that one, you get 108 times the benefit. But if you do 108 less than you would do one nicely, then why would you bother? Right? I'm going to cook, we're going to make a feast, and we're going to make 108 preparations, and each one of them is terrible. So am I going to go away going, wow, what a great feast, 108 preparations? You know? Wow, what was the best? Well, let's see. Well, actually, the water was really good, you know? Like that. You know, when it was served, of course. But, you know, it's like a... So did you get any? Well, actually, afterwards I got up and got it myself. But it was nice water, yes. You know, so. Oh, what was the best preparation you found? Well, actually, probably the salt was doing the best, you know? Nothing had any taste, so the salt did pretty good, you know? Does that make sense? Or would you say, okay, we have facilities and an ability, we can cook 5 preparations nicely. Right? And all 5 are good. People are going to walk away and go, that was a nice feast. Right? And they're going to talk about some other than the salt and the water. Oh, what did you like about it? What was nice about it? Oh, it was filling. You know? Like that. Does that make some sense? Yes.
So it's actually the endeavor with the appropriate focus, which actually is the devotion, and then if it's done properly, then that's what actually comes.
Yeah.
But if it's not properly focused, then just do anything, and the result is not pleasing to the devotee, to the Lord.
Yeah, doesn't. Means, in other words, the people are so unqualified, they're trying so much that one can always tolerate until such time as it becomes established. In other words, you perform the things now, and when, you know, the kids that are running things now understand and they grow up and they're running things, then it'll start to work properly. So you just have to put up with it for the next, you know, 20 years until they take over, right? You know, like that. But Rupa Goswami defines in the Upadeshamrita enthusiasm, Utsahan, as endeavor with intelligence, not endeavor with sentiment. Endeavor is there because sentiment is already there, right? You won't endeavor unless the sentiment's there. Because until you feel the need for it, you're not going to perform the activity. But that's not enough. It has to be with intelligence. Otherwise, it's activity. But enthusiasm means there's intelligence there. So it's a proper blend between the body, the mind, and the intelligence. Right? So that's what it means. Body, mind, and words engaged in the Lord's service. That's enthusiasm. If it's only body or only body and mind, right? Yeah. Does that make sense? Then it's not enough. It's got to include intelligence. And so, you know, in one's own enthusiasm, I mean one's own sentiments or one's own position is not enough. You know what I'm saying? Temple president means you can manage a temple. Temple president doesn't mean that you know how to install deities. You know what I'm saying? It's a different thing. If you had grown up where you knew how to do that, that's another thing. Then we're talking, you know, a very excellent, just like one temple that was in one deity installation, then basically all the persons in the management there were all from traditional Brahmin families. So they had grown up with all the ritual and everything like this. You know, they were either doing themselves or their family members were doing like that. So therefore they understood all the detail that was necessary. And there everything went smoothly. And they also, in doing that, were able to impress. They had the chief minister of the state. They had, you know, wealthy, wealthy people. They had big, you know, how you say, you know, I don't know what you call them down there. It's not Bollywood. It's, you know, Chennaiwood or, you know, like that people. And they were very impressed. One of them even brought, you know, a, what do you call it? Kanchipuram, a red Kanchipuram silk sari with jari. So at that time you were looking at 7,000 to 10,000 rupees to throw into the fire as the Purnahuti. It was brought by one of those guests. So they did fine, right? Because it was purely a ritual. There was no political aspect. And those chief ministers and all those guys came in dhotis. Right? And if they didn't know how to put one on or didn't have one, the temple provided a nice first class, you know, silk dhoti, and they put it on them. And because they knew it was a high grade ritual, they were happy to do it. rather than, no, Mr. You know, so rich, you're so fat, you can't get through the door, you can just wear your Sephardi suit, because we wouldn't want to inconvenience you, you know, because you're such a big man that, you know, you wouldn't do anything like this kind of sacrifice for God, because you've given the money. And besides that, if you don't wear, then actually I don't have to take off my shirt also, and because you're in there doing the bathing, then therefore I'm with you, and I'm kind of the one showing you and leading you, so I also get to bathe in my kurta without having made any other arrangements also. I like that. Not so good. Okay. And after the sacrificial platform had been thus constructed according to rule and as desired. You know, in other words, there's rules and there's desire, how big you want to make it or how much you want to decorate or like that. So it's a combination. It has ritual, but it has the personal touch. They installed the king at the snake sacrifice for the attainment of the object. And before the commencement of the snake sacrifice that was to come, there occurred this very important incident foreboding obstruction to the sacrifice. For when the sacrificial platform was being constructed, a professional builder of great intelligence and well-versed in the knowledge of laying foundations, a Sutta by caste, well acquainted with the Puranas, so here's another, he means the Sutta, he's doing these kind of like Brahminical work, but specifically here, building, right? Because Sutas build chariots, he builds sacrifices. Well acquainted with the Puranas, said, the soil upon which and at the time at which the measurement for the sacrificial platform has been made indicate that this sacrifice will not be completed, a Brahmana becoming the reason thereof. Hearing this, the king, before his installation, gave orders to his gatekeepers not to admit anyone without his knowledge. Right? You know, like that. Okay, so end here and we'll continue on. Today is... Yeah, there is.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.